Hi everyone, and welcome to the brand new Retro Raw Rundown, where we cover episode, tell me the number, Sandra.
189. Retro Raw 189. I say Retro Raw as though the name of the show is actually Retro Raw. Like,
That on the search function of the network, you won't find it.
No. Well, type anything on the search function of the network, you might not find it. It's
nothing.
Atrocious.
You don't find anything. Can't even find Chris Benoit on there. Anyway, so we're here to talk about the night after In Your House, It's Time. Before we begin with this podcast, though, we have a Patreon page, which over 200 of you are subscribed to right now, which is very, very humbling. Thank you very much. On there, you can pledge $1 a month and get our WrestleMania 6 review, where Robert and I discuss WrestleMania 6 and hilarity ensues when I talk about a tag team in a way that I probably shouldn't. Still your favorite thing. Or you can pledge $3 a month where you get that, but you also get a weekly interview. You also get other fun stuff that we put up. Like, we put up some random shit sometimes, like the Great Khali career retrospective is up there.
The smaller pay-per-view reviews that we do are going on Patreon at the $3 level.
Yes, so like this coming Monday, David and I will be covering Roadblock, End of the Line, on there, and Sandra and I will be there on February the 13th covering the Elimination Chamber from SmackDown. But also, if you pledge $5 a month or more, you get all of that stuff, plus you get the Retro Pay-Per-View reviews and Fave Fives. We've just done the Retro Pay-Per-View review of In Your House, It's Time is up there. Also, all the podcasts that people who pay $50 or more request us to do it on there. There's one with us talking about Kalisto and Right to Censor. Lots of great feedback in our Right to Censor conversation. There's one on there of us talking about Armageddon 2007. There's a discussion on women's wrestling. There is tons of stuff on there. More to come there. And as always, with $50 or more, we will record a podcast of your choosing on a topic that is reasonable enough that you choose for us. You can choose the host, you can choose me, Sandra, David, you can choose Robert, and God will try. Patreon.com/underneath the ropes is the place to go and get that. But let's talk about Raw, Sandra. The night after In Your House, It's Time, we open with a cold open, but we're in a new building again.
We are in a new building, but what I have written down is cold open, no intro, boo. I miss the intros.
You do love your intros. But it opens with Bret Hart's music hitting, much to the shock of Vince McMahon, saying, "What's Bret Hart doing here?" And Jim Ross says, "Don't you know McMahon? I've got an interview with him. Let me go and take care of this." So Jim Ross does an in-ring interview with Bret Hart. I am not saying this because I was more of a Bret Hart fan than Shawn Michaels, but this interview is excellent. Bret Hart is fucking raging that he was screwed, essentially, In Your House, It's Time. He had to deal with the interference of Stone Cold Steve Austin. He had to deal with the interference of Shawn Michaels. And he didn't regain the WWF Championship. He talks about... I feel like this interview was kind of like a turning point for Bret. He talks about there being no rules anymore. Doesn't know who his friends are, who his enemies are. He's trying to adjust to the changes in the WWF. Calls Shawn a little prissy. Enters himself in the Royal Rumble. And he decides that he's going to go on commentary. He talks about how, you know, what Shawn Michaels did. Shawn Michaels said he was going to call it down the middle, and him interfering showed the integrity of Shawn Michaels, showed the real integrity of him. He promised his click and everything, and then he went back on his word. But Bret said he's going to show Shawn how it's done and get on commentary. He says, "I'm going to go and mind my own business, Jim, and have a little fun."
Mm-hmm.
What did you think here of Bret and his attitude coming out of his loss in Your House, It's Time? Because I know that you're a fan of people reacting to losses.
Yeah, he did react to a loss, and he reacted to it kind of badly, I guess. I mean, not badly as in not in an entertaining way, but, I mean, like you said, he's pretty raging about this. He is very upset, and, I mean, Vince McMahon has started to call him bitter for the first time, and, I mean, Jerry Lawler, of course, like, "Bret Hart's a whiner, haha." But, I mean, I still don't think Bret Hart looks super comfortable on the microphone, because I don't think that he is super comfortable on the microphone, but I really like the change in attitude, and I really like what he's going for here. Like, he seems like he is getting better at these kinds of promos. They don't really click for me, I think, as much as they do for you, because he just kind of looks like... he still looks a bit bored sometimes, or like, well, he doesn't really know what he's doing.
This is the first time he's ever cut long-form promos
right.
in his career. So, yeah, you're right. I mean, he is trying to kind of get to grips with it and trying to adjust to that, which is interesting. Like, when he's on commentary, for example, he's not quite, like, he flubs a few of his lines.
He's pretty bad on commentary. I thought the promo was better than him on commentary, for sure. And it was interesting that he opens up by saying, you know what, his ma always taught him not to tarnish an apology with an excuse or something, but then is like, that's basically what I'm going to do. Because he's like, Shawn Michaels interfered, and he brings up Steve Austin, too, at some point, you know, and... But it's interesting, you know, him highlighting the changes in the World Wrestling Federation, knowing that, you know, he's been out of the World Wrestling Federation for a long time and just recently came back. It's interesting because things are changing. And then this episode's just kind of this weird hybrid between, like, the new stuff and, like, where things are going, because we have Stone Cold versus Vader next and we have all of that. And then, you know, later on in the show, we still have T.L. Hopper hanging about. So... it seems like we're definitely at kind of a crossroads.
And what's also interesting is the Brett character, and it feels like it's him in real life and him on screen, it's him becoming more sort of disgruntled with the state of the WWF and his perception of how it should be. And it's playing out on screen.
I think that's why it's starting to come off across better in his promos, because it feels more authentic. And
yeah, for sure.
He looks frustrated, for sure. It's just kind of harnessing that and, like, learning how to do long-form promos, which, if you haven't done a whole lot, it makes sense that he still looks a little uncomfortable with that. But, I mean, I thought that this was good, and I think the way he ended the promo was excellent when he said, you know, I'm going to have a little fun. And he just sounds pissed about going to commentary and whatnot. Jim Ross's reactions also to him are just great.
Yeah, and then we get the Tough Man match that we were due to get the night after Survivor Series, Steve Austin and Vader. If you take the sort of 10 to 15 minutes of this show, the open of Brett, his promo into the Tough Man match with Austin and Vader and all that sort of stuff, I don't know. I think you'd struggle to show me a 10 to 15 minute segment post pay-per-view that's any better than this. Because you have Austin and Vader, who are two fucking fighters. You know, Vader's this big monster, Austin's this tough SOB. They're just battering the shit out of each other. Bret Hart's in commentary. He's fascinating because he's trying to pretend like he's, you know, going to play along, but really you can tell he's just about to fucking kill somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Austin and Vader are like, you know, they're knocking lumps at each other. They go to the... At one point when Austin's punching Vader, the fans are just going mental for Austin. They love Bret. They hate Vader. Austin's not happy about Bret being there. I love the physicality with Austin and Vader, mm-hmm. especially when Vader goes for the Vader bomb and Austin low blows him.
Yeah.
Oh.
Right in front of the ref, by the way. Like, the ref didn't say anything about this. What even is that? Okay, here's the thing. They keep saying the words tough man match. Like, are they trying to make that an actual thing?
I think so.
Because it seems like they're trying to make that an actual thing. You know what's not an actual thing? A tough man match. What even is it supposed to be? Is it just like two big hossy guys fight and that's a tough man match? Do the rules change?
I mean, this is the only tough man match I ever remember, really. Like, it doesn't stick. But, I mean, when you take away that, what I love about this is the chaos of it, but all the chaos makes sense. Every bit of it makes sense. Like, Brett coming in to try and say he's going to call things down the middle, and then as soon as Vader, you know, back body drops Austin out of the ring, Brett just snaps, puts the headset off, goes over, sharpshooter on Austin on the floor. Vader's pissed that he's been disqualified because of Brett, so Vader and Brett start fighting. There's chaos going on. Then Brett puts the sharpshooter in again. The officials are trying to pull him off. There's an official pulling Brett's hair to try and get him off of Steve Austin.
Yeah, mental. Yeah, no, it's all really, really interesting, and I loved it. I did. Like, I love the chaos of it. It does seem kind of interesting, too, because Brett, in his promo, he says the words no rules a whole lot, and I swear that it seemed like they were building to a pay-per-view called No Rules instead of to the Royal Rumble for a little while.
I thought you were going to bring up the fact that it was only when he said it, because I watched it back a second time, and there's a bit where he goes, there is no rules. And I thought Sondra's going to be like, there are no rules, Brett.
I did actually say that to the television.
Of course she did.
And then actually so did Mr. Sondra when I was rewatching it. There's a reason we're married. But
yeah.
But, like, Brett, with all of his talk of there being no rules, and he doesn't know, like, what's going on in the World Wrestling Federation anymore, and, you know, he basically is saying, like, everything's kind of going to hell, and no one's respecting the rules, and blah, 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 blah. And then Bret Hart, talking all about how, you know, insincere Shawn Michaels is, that he wasn't going to interfere. He's like, no, I'm going to sit here on commentary. I'm not going to interfere. And then he interferes, and he puts Steve Austin in the sharpshooter. So he's sort of just becoming the thing that he hates. He's basically kind of giving into it, right? Like, well, if I can't beat him by being a good guy, then I might as well just give in and be an asshole too, which is an interesting character arc.
Well, because what he said in his promo as well was he talked about, you know, I can't remember the exact verbiage, but he was basically saying he's not going to play by the rules either. You know,
yeah.
If there's no rules, that's fine. I'll not play by the rules. So he basically, it almost felt like to prove a point, he did exactly what Shawn Michaels did.
Yeah,
he
yeah, go, okay, absolutely.
Fine, I'll do it. I'll do it. Okay. And so you have this like great 10-15 minute thing. And then the next thing you get is fake Razor and Diesel against the Godwins. Like that's the, which is interesting. You're talking about, you know, we're going into this realistic era with stuff, and then you're like, oh, it's fake Razor and Diesel against the Godwins.
Which is not that exciting. They did replay Ahmed Johnson and Farouk from last week's pay-per-view as well.
They did. They showed you the clip of, you're going down! and all that jazz.
We talk more about that on Patreon, but yeah, I mean, for those of you who don't subscribe on Patreon, basically Ahmed Johnson was cutting a promo about losing his girlfriend and his car and whatnot because of Farouk's attack. Farouk comes out with the Nation of Domination to interrupt, uses some very racially charged language, and then Ahmed Johnson starts a "You're going down" chant. They kept in the bit about the Uncle Tom.
It's very crucial to the story.
On this, they cut out the part where he said, "You're the one setting your people back 50 years."
There's only so much USA Network will allow you to clear. Yeah, so they're, you know, they're just, the thing about this was back in this, because it was 1 hour Raw, you couldn't fit everybody onto the show. So, you know, by showing this kind of 2 minute clip of the pay-per-view, you're filling people in at the Rumble, they're going to get Ahmed and Farouk. And it was pretty good. Now, when we had Razor and Diesel against the Godwins, I mean, I have really nothing to say about the actual match, but the ending, when Diesel jackknifes Phineas, didn't look the best jackknife I've ever seen.
It did not.
Like, I feared for Phineas's neck.
To actually call it a jackknife is generous.
Well, I mean, that's the official title of his finisher.
Well, when his finisher is executed properly, yes, it is called a jackknife.
I mean, we refer to sometimes The Rock does a sharpshooter. It is not a sharpshooter that he does. He does a weird leg thing that, like, I still love that thing where, like, Bret Hart tweeted out to The Rock one time saying, like, if you ever want to know how to put the move on properly, come around and I'll teach you.
That was great. And much needed if The Rock is going to insist on using that move. Oh, for fuck's sake.
Exactly. Any notes on Razor and Diesel against the Godwins with no entrance? I didn't need to rant about the music.
Yeah, that's true. It was no entrance at all. Just the fact that on commentary it's so weird because they're like, Phineas is not known for his mental acumen or his wrestling technique. So why is he here? Like, what is the point of Phineas Godwin then? And then, like, a minute later, apparently Henry Godwin is the brains and the brawn. So, whatever. I just don't get the Godwins, probably. But, Vince actually says the line, this is like the most important thing during this match, does not have anything to do with the match, but Vince McMahon himself says the line, Bret Hart is not a whiner any more than Shawn Michaels is. Have we ever heard Vince say something negative about Shawn Michaels before?
No, I'm surprised they kept it in the edit on the network.
I know, it was shocking to me, because Lawler was going on about how Bret was whining. And yeah, Vince actually says that Shawn Michaels is also a whiner, so now we have two whiny men that we're building a match between, I guess.
Naturally.
So, the thing with that, this just occurred to me. If they're building mm-hmm. towards Shawn and Bret, who's supposed to be the heel?
It would be Shawn.
Okay.
Not right now, but it would turn into be Shawn. Or no, maybe it would be Bret, actually.
Because Bret is showing all of the signs of a heel turn. Would they actually try and run a babyface Shawn Michaels versus a heel Bret Hart at WrestleMania?
They probably. But see, the thing is, I think that part of the reason that Shawn probably didn't do it is because he knew that, like, Chicago, after Survivor Series, you know, Shawn's confidence is knocked. Sid has cheered over him. He's not going to go to WrestleMania and have his big moment ruined by the fans booing, which would have happened, 100%. Because he's so unliked. He's so unlikable, as we'll see in the promo that he cuts very shortly. So I feel like, you know, that was maybe part of why Sean, I mean, I don't want to go into what he does, but it's maybe part of the reason he wasn't involved.
Yeah, that's true.
There's always a reason with Sean. We do get our glorious...
Oh, the other interesting thing was that on commentary at this point, and this is important to later, JR says, you know, we don't need clowns here, plumbers, garbage men, that kind of thing.
These are the plumbers on the show later.
The plumbers on the show later, yeah. And mm-hmm. also you're saying this when two wrestling hog farmers are in the ring.
Well, one's a hog farmer, one's a pig farmer.
Right.
Phineas I. Godwin, yes. Henry O. Godwin. Yeah.
I'm just saying, it was interesting.
Sid is here, Sandra. Psycho Sid is here, the man shares your birthday. The game I play, I am the master, and if you step into the ring, you will go down. Sid gets chilled at the mere mention of the Alamo Dome, calls Shawn Michaels Sham Michaels, spits on the camera, threats Jose, tells him to stay home where he belongs. I love this guy so much.
I love him so much, too. I just, even when Vince congratulates him on his win, he goes, thank you very much, Mr. Vince McMahon. Ha 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 ha. Even just, like, saying thank you is a delight when it comes from Psycho Sid.
He was so good here. Really, really good. And it's funny because, like, once he's done, they show you Shawn Michaels to have a promo from him, and Vince is kind of like, you know, Shawn Michaels will be up next. And then, like, as he's going to break, Lawler's like, what about me? And he's like, oh, yeah. And then the King will be defeated by Sable. Which is the first funny thing that Vince has said so far in our run here. That's, like, deliberately him being funny and us laughing with him as right. opposed to us laughing at him, which is usually what happens.
Like when Flash Funk is dancing or whatnot.
Exactly. I know that's right.
Get funky.
You have Shawn Michaels here, who, you know, to be fair to him, does have fabulous hair. This is the one time where his hair is, you know, it's got a wee bit of volume going on.
Oh, yeah, it's flowing, it's luxurious.
Bit of a L'Oreal number going on. He looks angry at every question Vince McMahon poses to him, looks like a complete dick, gets some digs in on Brett. Keeps going on about how he lives his life openly on television, unlike everyone else. Which what I took that to mean was, so you mean that when some people don't want to job and they do it anyway, they're not being open and honest, but when you completely throw a hissy fit in front of Vader, that's you being honest, and that's a good thing.
Apparently, I had no idea what he was going for with that. Also, he can't pronounce his own name in this promo.
No.
He goes, friggin' Shawn Michaels. Has been humiliated plenty of times. Shawn Michaels, remember, brought to you by all of the drugs. I just can't handle Shawn Michaels, okay? Like, he's terrible.
I remember, there's one point, I can't remember what it is in the show, there's one point that Vince McMahon is going to break, and he says, we'll be right back here on Monday Night Draw.
Yeah, yep, he does. He definitely does that.
Calls it Draw. To be fair to Shawn, though, I did like the psychology of the Jose thing, where he was kind of saying, you know, I'm not angry at Sid for winning the title. That's, you know, like, it's a sport, you know, that you lose titles, whatever. He's angry about what he did to Jose. Which at least he's sticking to that narrative, at least.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good story. I don't think it's very believable.
Oh, no, because
Shawn Michaels.
Yeah, that's the problem. The problem
Shawn Michaels is reminding me more and more of Roman Reigns.
Yep.
I mean, not necessarily in terms of, like, in-ring capability, but in terms of character and authenticity.
I would concur. And what's interesting as well is, like, so while Sean's talking, we hear the music of Furnace and LaFon, like, throughout his interview.
Yeah.
And then, like, it's so weird, like, now, bear in mind, this was a live episode. This was not a taped one.
Mm-hmm.
Which means that they couldn't just put it. So that's why we do go to the match in progress. But I have a question for you, Sandra. You're an intelligent lady from the Americas. So, Furnace and LaFon are facing Dr. X and TL Hopper.
Yes, even though we don't need plumbers in the World Wrestling Federation.
We don't, but he's, you know, one more time. TL Hopper's there. What makes Dr. X a doctor?
I was going to ask you the same thing. Because as far as I can tell, Dr. X is just a guy in red pants and a red mask.
Mm-hmm.
What is he a doctor of, exactly?
Wrestling?
Maybe.
Maybe. Do you know who's under the mask?
No.
Dr. Tom Pritchard.
I wondered if it was like a Dr. Tom Pritchard situation, and now that I know that it is Dr. Tom Pritchard, that's actually really funny. Wasn't he a body Donna too?
He was. He was Zip.
I mean, I can't tell them apart. It's fine. But
racist. So we had Furness and LaFon, who, I mean, Phil LaFon's like million-dollar dream anti-German suplex move is like my favorite thing.
It's so good. That's the thing. Furness and LaFon are really, really good wrestlers. And
but Vince has no interest in them.
Vince
whatsoever.
Has no interest in them, and they have no story. So, I mean, I kind of, after Survivor Series, it seemed like they were going to be the number one contenders from everything that had been going on and whatnot. It, you know, they stood tall and whatnot. And I honestly kind of forgot about them until I saw them on this episode of Raw. And I was like, that's not good, because, I mean, I know in future that they could theoretically go on to do something, right? And I just forgot about them because they don't have any story or really much character to go on, but I really enjoy seeing them wrestle. And I feel like it's kind of a TM61 situation where, like, right now TM61 is like just sort of starting to be a little more interesting on NXT, but they don't really have any story or anything like that. And wrestling is a focus on current day wrestling and, you know, current day NXT. The in-ring product is a lot more important than it seemed to be back on Raw in 1996. So if they're just two guys who are really good wrestlers with no character and it's 1996, it just doesn't seem to bode well for them.
No, it's kind of like they're in an era where like it's all characters and they're not characters.
Yeah.
And that hurts them. But yeah, we'll see where they go. They got another victory here. So I guess the LaFon and Furnace train continues. We did have a very quick Billy Gunn promo bragging about what he's going to do to Bart, because tonight is the showdown of the Smoking Guns. Billy and Bart in the ring in the main event, Sandra, but that's not
Billy
your main
Gunn
event.
Billy Gunn
smiles
a whole lot.
Yeah, Billy Gunn feels to me like if Zach Morris grew up and became a wrestler.
Oh, but Zach Morris grew up to be Shawn Michaels, I thought we determined.
Well, I'm changing my mind.
Okay.
Because, like, even Zach Morris wasn't as much of a dick as Shawn Michaels is. Like, Zach Morris once in a while would do something nice for somebody.
That's
Shawn Michaels
true.
Never does anything nice for anyone. But like, Billy and Bart is not your main event of this show, Sandra.
No.
Your main event is the finals of the Milton Bradley Karate Fighters Tournament. Sable has brought out the big guns here. She's brought, I don't mean her fake breasts, she's brought the leather back.
Mm-hmm.
I have a question for you. I want you to answer me.
Okay.
Why is Mark Meadow dressed to wrestle?
That's an excellent question. I have no idea why Mark Miro is dressed to wrestle. Maybe because he had to match Sable and he had black gear. It was like, maybe I'll get some action in the ring.
Now, before any of this kicks off, we do cut to a promo from George and Adam.
We do.
At the Alamo Dome, where they made a bet.
Yes. Where George Glasses Guy thought that Sid was going to win, and Redhead Guy did not, so then he owed him money. And then they move one seat closer to the ring.
Well, that was the bet. He got the seat if he won. So he got, but here's the thing, they swapped seats and he was like, yeah, one seat closer to the ring. And you're like, you're not though. Like, you're in the same row.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. And it also begs the question, if we're going with, you know, the fallacy that
I know exactly where you're going here.
General admission for the Royal Rumble. Why aren't you sitting ringside?
Okay, I thought you were going to ask, because my question was, they were there last week, right?
Yeah.
And this is 1997, so this is pre-internet.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't have mobile phones. So how do they know who won?
Oh, that's another good question.
Logic, ladies and gentlemen.
I mean,
logic.
Did a janitor come in and tell them, maybe?
All right, guys, you're a month early. So just meet Brett, though. Yes, find out.
It does, like, I just, if you're going to be going into the arena and if they're trying to get seats this early, they chose a seat kind of far up.
They did. They didn't choose wisely. But I'm going to just try and get a bunch of this out here and just get your thought on the whole thing. Of the finals of the Milton Bradley Karate Fighters Tournament, we have Jerry Lawler, who is just such an excellent heel. He really is. But like, some guys today could do with watching Jerry Lawler in this kind of time, just by his like demeanor and stuff. He's such a dick
mm-hmm.
in all ways. So Lawler's with Hunter Hearst Helmsley, who's now going to be in his corner while Meadow's in the corner of Sable.
Can we just point out that there are corner men for this epic battle? Because when, actually it was funny because after the match before, King's looking like real antsy because he's been really excited about this, you know, all night. He's been talking about, you know, his big match. So yeah, after the Billy Gunn promo, they're like, King, where are you going? He's like, he basically looks like he's about to like jump out of his skin or something. He's so excited about this. And then when Sable and Mark Miro come in, he's like, I knew Sable wouldn't come and face me alone. So, you know, I brought Hunter Hearst Helmsley to be in my corner. There are corner men because this is such an epic battle. This is absolutely my main event of the show. I mean, like, some stuff happens after it, but does it matter? Not as much as Karate Fighters.
However, poor Todd Pettengill gets shafted here. Jim Ross took all the glory. But we do get Sable.
Maybe Todd's
and,
still, you know, weeping after his tragic loss.
He could be. I would be weeping.
Granted, he did do the retrospective promo, so he got better.
He got something. But they try and do, like, pre-match barbs, and Sable's trying to, like, trade barbs with King, and King's so good at it, and then, like, she's too quiet for the mic, so you can't even hear the stuff that she's saying.
Well, she does really say, my tiger ninja is going to make a pauper out of you.
Slut. She's so, like, over-sexualizing the Milton Bradley Karate Fighters.
It's true.
I don't like it.
I'm surprised she's not sticking one up there. I don't know.
Yeah. Probably did it backstage. Sable wins, though. She wins the tournament. Lawler's going mental. He's like, she cheated. I want a rematch. Sable's refusing to give him a rematch. Then Meadow gets in his face. Meadow attacks King. Triple H and Lawler then double-team Meadow until Goldust makes the save. Meadow and Helmsley fight away into the crowd. And we're left with King and Goldust. And...
Before we get into this, because yes, this is something to get into, King's promo beforehand also was, no king has ever been beaten by a woman, ha ha! And then he got beat, ha! Healing at its best. I actually want to see him win.
Yeah, that's the whole point. Like, the heel should be saying that. The heel should be saying, ha ha, women can't beat me, and then get beat.
I was also a little surprised at Sable's outfit choice, just because the gauntlet sleeve things that she was wearing seemed like they might interfere with the action.
That's fair. Again, I think you're thinking too much into it more than she is, but she did win, so I guess it's okay for her to have not changed her outfit for it. But
and then when she was running away afterwards, like after the brawl and everything, when
holding up her top.
Well, yeah, because you know, you've never had to run in a sleeveless outfit, right?
How do you know?
What?
How do you know?
Well, I mean, but if your tits fall out, it's not quite the same.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, so I'm just saying that physics are not in favor of Sable here. And no. So her, like, running away and having to hold herself in was just quite the image.
But we do... So basically, Jerry Lawler and Goldust are in the ring, and Jerry Lawler's like, you know, I've not got any beef with you. But, you know, so what? Helmsley made a pass on Marlena. I would have thought you'd be happy, because at least she's with a real man. Because you're, you know... And Goldust just standing there, he's like... And he's like, what am I? He's like, you know, you're, and then like,
well, aren't you? They can't say gay.
They can't say gay. So basically, Lawler then says, are you queer? And then Vince McMahon and Com, she says, well, we've stuck with this long enough. I guess we should just stay with it.
Well, I mean, first he does this thing where he's like, we might want to be right back. Like, he wants to cut away from it or something. And then, well, we've come this far. We might as well stick with it. It's one of those weird Goldust, things.
Yes, and then, but then Goldust, he's been asked if he's queer, and he just says, no, punches Lawler to a huge babyface ovation. And I get what they were doing, in the sense of, like, they didn't want, like, because the whole thing was at the beginning, they played up the gay thing with Goldust to kind of get some heat, and just the crowds at that point were not ready for that kind of gimmick. They just weren't, you know. They had a discussion of why they maybe should have been okay with it or whatever, but it was 1996 and they weren't. That is the bottom line of it. But the way that it was executed of Goldust inning himself, essentially,
yeah,
to massive cheers was like, it's very, very weird to watch it in 2016.
It was because, very weird to watch. And also just really awkward. Like,
because essentially what you're doing is, like, the crowd are basically saying, yay, he's not gay!
Well, yeah, it's absolutely that. And, I mean, even just the execution of it, because Lawler can't just come out and say, like, well, you're gay, so what does it matter? They can't say the word gay, apparently, on TV. Like, it was
but
that
they can
actual...
say queer.
But they could say queer? But, like, it goes on for a while. Like, it felt like a while that King and Goldust are just staring at each other, and King's just going, well, you're... Well, aren't you? And Goldust just doesn't respond. He's like, you know, aren't you? And it takes even a while for Goldust to be like, what am I?
So, but overall, what did you think of the segment in terms of the execution of Goldust becoming a babyface and Jerry Lawler being used as the way to get there?
I mean, it's a very different conversation as to, like, yes, is Jerry Lawler an effective heel to get someone over as a babyface? Yes. Yes, he is. Am I a big fan of Goldust having to say no and having his babyface turn solidified by the fact that, no, I like pussies and not dicks, so I can be your hero, everyone. Yay!
Yes, that's exactly my question.
Yeah, like, I'm just not a big fan of this story and all of its implications, because it's basically, it is making it out in no uncertain terms that if Goldust were still gay, he would absolutely not be able to be a babyface and be the hero for the people.
Yep. No, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. I'm the same as you. I think that the execution of Lawler here was really clever, because I think he was really good at being the foil. But I think it's just unfortunate that they had to make the gay thing be the sort of, like, the thing to get the pop.
Yeah, because, you know, that was absolutely what it was, is the fact that he is straight, got the big baby face pop. Like, yay, you don't have sex with men! Cheers
Which just
to that!
Shows, you know, it's kind of indicative of where the WWF was at that time, and where Vince's mind was.
It was interesting, though, too. I will say this for it. I thought it was really clever the way it played out from the finals of The Karate Fighter.
Yeah, they
the
got
way it
there.
All kind of seamlessly moved from, you know, Miro and Helmsley having problems to, you know, Goldust having to come out to make the save because, you know, Mark Miro was being double teamed on the ground, not in a gay way because that would be horrible. But he
Vince McMahon's talking about a gay gangbang on TV.
Yeah, but yeah, like the way that it moved on from all of that, it transitioned really seamlessly into the whole story. So I thought as a segment, that part of the execution was really well done. I just really can't support a story where the big baby face pop is, yay, I'm not gay. And also, Marlene is like dressed like a gold Mrs. Claus or something.
She is, but it's funny because this is now, I mean, Marlena never spoke or was humanized, and now she's going to be.
What was the point of Marlena up till now, then? Because if she wasn't with him, like, she was just there?
She was the director. So, you know, he used to, at the beginning, he would do movie quotes all the time, as if he was a big movie star.
Oh, yeah.
And she would be his director, and she would sit in the director's chair.
But, like, did she ever do anything?
No.
She was just there.
Yeah, she's just there.
But now she's there to be like, because he like kisses her hand or something. I was surprised he didn't just grab her and make out with her to be like, look how straight I am. Ha ha ha.
They're going to get there.
I'm sure they will. But yeah, like he kisses her hand and then takes her hand or whatever. So it's like, no, look, I'm with a woman. Ugh.
Yep. This is totally on me. I'm short on time, so I need to kind of move on from this at the moment. But we may pick this up again next week on next week's show if we have some more thoughts about the King. Because I think there's more to be said on this in a sort of broader sense. So we will do that. We do get a Psycho Sid Christmas Carol with Classy Freddy Blassie, which is going to play at the end of this podcast. Sondra, you're not a fan of Christmas, but did you like the carol?
I did like the carol. I can't be too mad at any song that says, you know, oh, Psycho Sid, don't flip your lid. It's so good. And it's talking about power bombs being a devastating maneuver, and like
it is my favorite thing.
It was pretty funny. It might, like, I have a very specific list of Christmas songs that I will allow to be played in my presence. And Oh Power Bomb, I think has made it onto that list.
I have a very specific list. Very, very, very quickly, Bart and Billy, this Battle of the Smoking Guns. The match is kind of nothing. Then Bart does a slingshot and Billy Gunn has a serious neck injury, and then their wives get involved to, like, you know, help, and it goes off the air with a bit of chaos. Did this do anything for you?
It confused me, for sure. I mean, I didn't really understand what was going on, because the match wasn't enough to really get me super invested in it. I mean, commentary did a good job of building it up to be like, how must their families feel watching this in Texas? Like, it must be really difficult. It's brother against brother. It's really torn the family apart. They had their wives in the crowd. They showed Bart's wife and they showed Billy's wife. And they said that Billy's sons were there too. So they're really building this up as like brother versus brother, epic battle. I can't say that it intrigued me as much as, say, like, Bret Hart versus Owen Hart or something, which is kind of how they were building it. And fair play to them, they did everything that they could. The smoking guns explosion is just not that intriguing to me. I like Billy Gunn.
Oh, you're going to get some good Billy Gunn in 1997.
I know that there's a thing called Rockabilly coming, and I have no idea what it is.
It's going to be so good.
No, I'm looking forward to it. But, I mean, the whole thing at the end, though, I felt like Billy Gunn was way too sympathetic, because what actually happened? Like, what was the point of this?
Basically, just to try and extend it and make people want to see the match more. But it didn't work.
No, because it almost came off as like, why wouldn't you have Bart Gunn be the one injured? He's the babyface.
It's a very logical thought, Sandra.
Because you have Billy Gunn laying on the ground, and then you have his wife like crying over him and being like, oh, you monster. And then, I mean, Bart Gunn comes around and is like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. What did I do? I did a wrestling move on my brother who's a wrestler and who's been talking shit about me constantly, and now I feel terrible about it, and he's injured, and like Bart's wife is there too, looking really out of place in her Calvin Klein sweatshirt. Like, and then, you know, Billy's wife is like, you've done enough, go away. And it was like, it was enough that, like, I was fixing my glasses as I was watching Raw, and it was enough to make me look up and be like, kind of like, what's happening right now? What is going on? I don't understand. But it came off as Billy Gunn was way too sympathetic, and now like Bart seemed kind of like a dick for injuring him, but not really, because he just did a wrestling move. So
it's a conundrum. But how did this as a whole show, with this as the end, where is your thumb for it? Up, down, or in the middle?
Oh, thumbs up. How can I give a thumbs down to the Karate Fighters final, which was live in the ring, which I don't know if I exclaimed how excited I was that I didn't know it was going to be a live in the ring celebration situation, right? Like, I thought it was going to be another pre-tape segment backstage for the final, but no, it was live in the ring. And then plus the opening 10-15 minutes were so good, and there's so much story going on, and there's so many intertwined things that I can't hate it, and I love it a whole lot.
I am with you, Sandra. It is a thumbs up from me. I need to dash off as fast as humanly possible, so you can find us on Twitter at SandraRuthRW, KennyMC1985, and Inside_the_Ropes. Thank you so much, everyone, for the continued support. Sorry this one was a little bit late. We will be back next week, 2 days before Christmas, with another Retro Raw, where the Wild Man Mark Meadow will have his final chance at the Intercontinental Championship against Hunter Hearst Helmsley. Sandra, have you enjoyed getting in the time machine again?
Of course. It's been lovely.
Well, I will get in it again with you next week.
It sounded kind of sexual.
It did. No! Yay! Okay, bye.
Bye. Oh, we love, oh, how we love, our racing moves so nicely. Oh, psycho zero, what you did.